From Marketplace, I'm Noelle King, and for David Brancaccio, and this is the Midday Update. Two of the world's biggest chemical companies, Dow Chemical and DuPont, are reportedly in talks to merge. Each company is valued at $60 billion, which would make this one of the biggest mergers in a year full of them. One potential maneuver on the heels of a merger would be to split the company into three businesses. Eric Gordon is a professor at the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business.
The likely three businesses would be a commodity business where all you want is scale. The second business would be sort of the high-end, high-science, high-technology specialty products business where you need a lot of scientists and chemical engineers. And the third one would be agriculture. It's going to be tricky with the antitrust regulators because the idea is to split yourself into three divisions, each of which dominates its market. And, of course, market dominance is something that regulators don't like, and regulators have been really active in.
He says the move is part of a broader trend.
Industries are going to move away from being organized by their underlying capabilities, for example, in chemicals by science and chemical engineering, and be organized by markets and by sort of business models, commodities versus special. There are a lot of industries that probably have companies where the sum of the separated parts of the company are worth more than the parts jammed together.
Eric Gordon teaches at the University of Michigan. We are 1 week out from a Federal Reserve decision on interest rates. Jeffrey Cleveland is here to tell us what's guiding the markets in the meantime. He's the chief economist at Payden and Riegel. Good morning, Jeffrey.
Good morning, Noelle.
So we are arguably in something of a holding pattern ahead of a decision by the Fed. Until then, what are the markets rising and falling on?
It seems like a bit of a vacuum ahead of the Federal Reserve next week. And I think what is rippling through markets right now, every day, investors coming in, looking at their screens and seeing commodity prices making fresh lows. For example, the price of oil, Brent crude, hit below 40. We're seeing that reflective in lower stock prices. And I think you see it playing out in the bond market as well. The high-yield debt market has a big share of that. It's dedicated to energy. And credit spreads in that sector are widening.
And how does what's happening in the high-yield bond market ripple into the markets?
I think, Noelle, people look to the high-yield bond market as a harbinger, as a leading indicator of economic activity. Historically, you've seen instances where weakness in the bond market have predated weaknesses in the broader economy and the stock market, and people are looking for that relationship to hold up once again.
Jeffrey Cleveland is chief economist at Payden & Riegel. Jeffrey, thank you so much.
Thank you, Noelle.
Here's a term you've probably heard if you've been looking at buying or renting a home recently, walkability. A neighborhood's level of pedestrian friendliness has become a big selling point as people increasingly ditch their cars for health, environmental, and financial reasons. Real estate websites now list a home's walk score along with how many bathrooms and closets it has. And some suburbs are trying to get with the times. From Sandy Springs, Georgia, WABE's Molly Samuel reports.
Sandy Springs is a sprawling, car-centric city just north of Atlanta, and I'm here with Mayor Rusty Paul at a construction site where workers are redoing a road and adding a sidewalk.
We first started this project several years ago because we wanted to create a more pedestrian-friendly area, not just here, but all across Sandy Springs.
Sandy Springs, like lots of suburbs, just didn't have many sidewalks. Now everybody wants them, says Paul. Residents ask,
when are my sidewalks going in?
But it's not that easy. It costs a lot, takes planning. Sandy Springs tried one approach where any new house also had to have a sidewalk.
Which led to a lot of sidewalks to nowhere, a patchwork of unconnected sidewalks.
The lack of sidewalks is not really Sandy Springs' fault, says Dan Reuter. He's with the Atlanta Regional Commission.
You have a whole bunch of places like Atlanta that really grew during a period where, you know, outward expansion, or as you might call sprawl, was very popular.
And now, tastes have changed.
I probably had a keys in my hand when I turned 16. My daughter is 16 and has no intention of driving.
But Reuters says the commission supports more walkable development, not just for the millennials. It's also for seniors, for families with kids, or people who just want to drive less. Skylar Olson is an economist with the real estate website Zillow.
We have certainly found that those walkable areas tend to do better over time. They're more resilient during the housing bubble bust, and they've since appreciated much faster.
And sidewalks are a fundamental piece of this new real estate reality. Now, instead of the sidewalk to nowhere ordinance, Sandy Springs is prioritizing where to put them, around schools and parks, for instance. Mayor Rusty Paul says it's all going to take time.
We look at it like a salami. We're going to keep slicing it till we've got enough for a sandwich.
This is something lots of people are working on, academics, city planners, and developers, trying to figure out how to retrofit the suburbs. In Sandy Springs, Georgia, I'm Molly Samuel for Marketplace.
Last up, 1 year after exiting from a brief but highly publicized bankruptcy, things are looking up for the city of Detroit. The AP reports today Detroit has paid down its debts and is on track to have a $35 million surplus this fiscal year. This is a city that just a few years ago was struggling to find cash to pay its workers. Coming to you from studios at Montclair State University in New Jersey, I'm Noelle King with the Marketplace Midday Update. This is APM, American Public Media.